And boom goes the dynamite. And boom goes the dynamite.
Good evening and welcome to the final episode of Boom Goes the Dynamite for 2019, the AEW Dynamite Review Show here on the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. I'm Jeffrey. With me tonight is Chris. Chris, how you doing, man?
Hi, I'm good. AEW things have happened. It's the last one of the year for us, and we've got an interesting show where before we started recording, Jeff and I apparently have some varying opinions on it, so it'll be interesting to kind of run it along. So without further ado, let's get started.
Well, of course, we as we traditionally do, we usually start with AEW Dark, but since you weren't here last week, the announcement of the next AEW pay-per-view, Revolution...
Yeah, I did see... I did see the adverts for that. They did show them in this week's Dark as well, thankfully. So I was privy to that in that regard. So that was neat.
In actual Chicago.
Yep. That I looked up the venue and I'm like, yep, that is it. That's the specifying the graphic in downtown Chicago.
It is mere blocks from McCormick Place, which is where C2E2 will be happening.
Yep, and apparently it's part of the C2E2 weekend to begin with.
Oh, it is. Yeah, because so, yeah, like I said last weekend, Reed Pop, the owners of both C2E2, the New York Comic Con, and various other shows around the globe, they are I think they're pretty major sponsor of AEW because there was a pretty big AEW panel at New York Comic Con. Dynamite premiered. So
that makes sense, and
the Kenny and the Bucks have been guests of C2E2 in the past as well, so
there's a relationship there to begin with. So yeah, that makes sense. It's the next step.
The tickets go on sale officially this Friday. There is a pre-sale tomorrow that I have received emails about because I am registered with C2E2, so
there you go.
So chances are I will be there since I'm going to be right there, and why the hell not? I can actually walk to this venue from the con. So
you're usually there for, as far as I can tell from the years that we've known each other, you've been there every single year. So it's not,
I have been
like...
there literally every single year of this convention since it started. So
It's not one of the situations where it's like, it would be out of reach for you in any way, shape, or form. So, yeah, there you go.
I mean, it may cost me, $30 to take an Uber after, for the post-show BarCon, or if I, feel like going the distance, I can take the train too. There's the CTA is right there too. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so yes, I am planning to attend Revolution, even though I think the name is pretty generic. But
yeah, it is what it is.
So let's talk AEW Dark from Garland, Texas, the previous week. The show opens with a Young Bucks promo video where they self-aggrandize about, well, we're not actually the best and we've been lying this whole time. So now we're going to, okay, sure.
It's like, I guess it's hyped for the title match, which, all right, fair enough. We got that. But then we have an interesting little match here with non-title, of course, with SCU, Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky against Private Party.
Remember when Private Party were like the hottest thing, and they became absolute superstars? And yeah, we haven't seen them in weeks, and now they get fed to SCU in a non-title match,
which had its spots, bits and pieces were good, but I feel that, again, it is one of the situations where you have to have, I guess, teams take losses here and there, but Private Party, they started off the year on the TV side of the fence, kind of jumped the gates quite literally with that upset over the Young Bucks, but ever since it's just sort of been stop and go. Yeah, it's just very inconsistent. And
the match was dull to begin with. So
the interesting portion of it, ironically enough, and I can't believe I'm saying this in the year 2019, Vicky Guerrero was on commentary for this.
Oh yeah, what the hell?
Vicky Guerrero came out of nowhere.
Wow,
it came out of nowhere at that.
Wow, yeah, I know, right?
And then we doubled down on that by having her there for Dress of the Night and Joey Janela in there as well, which...
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Janela was interesting. He had some zingers and definitely was just shooting the breeze for the most part during the course of the night, but a couple of good one-liners interjected here and there in some of these matches. It's not Excalibur Chuck Taylor levels of chemistry, but close enough.
Anyway, I thought that match was pretty dull, and I think it was a waste of Private Party. So yeah, things are what they are. So whatever, you know, the SCU mega push continues, at least on Dark. After that, we got a brief recap of the women's division before we went into two women's singles matches in a row. Showcasing both of the women who will be wrestling tonight for the number one contendership to Riho's AEW women's title. The first match, Britt Baker against Shoujo Machiko.
Mm-hmm.
Not very familiar with it, and we didn't get much anyway because it seemed like it was a squash.
Yeah, it definitely was the case.
And a dull one at that. So that 2 for 2 on dull matches.
Yeah.
So far.
Just basically a situation where you're building up Britt accordingly for the match of Dynamite, and you're using local enhancement talent to do it, which I can respect that at the very least. If you're going to stat pad for somebody, at least in the situation, don't put one of your main roster folks in danger of, you know, taking an L that could derail their momentum, if you will. Something that the first match could have used a little bit more of if they wanted to use SCU. In Dark, they could have just given them a local team or something like that to go with rather than private sort of giving party. Private party in the rally. Yeah, but that said and done, from there, we do have Chris Statlander, who is the number 2 ranked woman in the division at this point. Two big singles wins for her, one big singles win for her over Hikaru Shida leading to this. And she goes up against Bea Priestley. And the match itself arguably could be said was the best match of the night, to be honest.
It was a really good match. I really enjoyed it. I think it was definitely Bea Priestley's best outing in AEW so far.
Definitely so.
Yeah, and Lawrence has completely sold me on Chris Statlander because, she is a joy to watch.
Statlander is phenomenal in general. If you have access to independentwrestling.tv, just go through past episodes of Uncharted Territory and check out some of her stuff during said episodes. She's had matches against the likes of David Starr. Nick Gage was another one.
Oh, my God.
It was insane. She literally jumped him like seconds into his entrance and he brawled through the crowd for like a good 10 minutes. It was phenomenal.
Oh, my God.
Cannot recommend that match enough.
Yeah, I may have to check that one out.
Definitely.
Chris Statlander gets the win on Bea Priestley. So yeah, but both of the main contenders get wins. We end Dark with Best Friends and Orange Cassidy going up against Billy the Fish and the Hybrid 2.
For those new to the show, Billy the Fish is Pac. It's just a nice little Newcastle United joke we have in here.
Indeed.
Interesting tandem there on the other side that was not Best Friends in Orange Cassidy, but it was fun. There was definitely bits and pieces there. Orange Cassidy is still arguably the most over being in all of AEW at this moment.
And arguably, yes. And oh my God, he did an actual wrestling move in this match. It was amazing. He did a shock tornado DDT, and oh my God.
Yep. Everybody popped accordingly. Although, you know, Pac was worn out by those incredibly deadly kicks initially, so it makes sense as to why he would have lost his grip on that one and allow the tornado DDT counter.
Right, but Billy the Fish does get the win on Chuck Taylor, so continuing his momentum.
Brutalizer, and again, he's making his case specifically here that even on commentary, they mentioned, yeah, he's pissed about losing to Omega, and he wants the rubber match out of it, which we'll get into a little bit more as we go from Dark into Dynamite.
Yes,
which...
and we have the final AEW Dynamite of 2019 live from the America Bank Center in Corpus Christi, Texas. Your commentators...
Which has not been...
Oh, go ahead.
Which before we get into the commentators portion, Corpus Christi, a town that has been... infamous for its dead crowds over many, many years. But then again, when WWE is the only show coming to your town and it kind of sucks, well, I guess that makes sense. But to their credit, they were lively for most of the night. Got to give them that.
Most
so,
of
just
the night.
Get that out of the way. Yeah.
Most of the night. That being said, your commentators, Jim Ross, Tony Schiavone, and Excalibur, we start right off with all parties in the ring. Kenny Omega and Adam Page against Pentagon and Phoenix, the Lucha Brothers. Obviously, this was a lot of angle building because they're playing up the tensions between Kenny Omega and Adam Page from last week, and you know it seemed to go pretty smooth for the elite members. In the beginning parts of the match, but you know, even though it was all part of angle building, it looks like the AEW bookers finally recognized the greatness that is Pentagon, giving him the win, giving him a direct pinfall win over Kenny Omega,
which did occur, I believe, just out of miscommunication, where a buckshot lariat from Hangman Page did hit Omega before all of this came through, but. Shows the difference between an established tag team and just throwing, you know, two singles guys in there kind of thing. Like, you know, tag team matches should do.
Yep, and shows the difference between one of the best wrestlers on Earth and Kenny Omega. So,
oh, snap.
And not by the way, yeah, by the way, I am 100% not kidding with this.
Yeah. Nope, Jeff, is your love for Pentagon Jr. in this podcast has been... very clear, and I do not blame you one bit for it.
But you know what? There's one thing is that there's actually quite a bit of history between Omega and Pentagon and the Lucha Brothers, and the announcers did not acknowledge one bit of it.
That doesn't surprise me, sadly.
I mean, they didn't even acknowledge their match from All In.
That feels odd, but it feels like a beat that they seemingly would bring up in a singles environment rather than a tag environment. But you know,
yeah, perhaps. Whatever. But you know, even then, in AAA, there's been history between. I mean, there's definitely history between Omega and Rey Fénix because that's who Omega beat for the Mega Campeonato.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just, and you know all the and besides which, how about the PWG encounters between the Elite and the Lucha Brothers?
Yeah, they did have a particular six-man tag a couple of years ago in 2017, which I somehow managed to get into the building and standing room, even though I initially did not have tickets for that night.
Pentagon. This was the match that established Pentagon. I had absolutely no respect for Kenny Omega. I mean, he was swearing at him the whole match. In Spanish, but you know.
Yep. As Pentagon is known to do, but either way, the right team does get the win here. You do get a little bit of a confrontation between Hangman and Omega post-match due to the miscommunication, which it makes sense even more so given the fact that we've known for weeks, or at least it's been told to us in commentary over the past few weeks, that Hangman isn't really hanging out with the Elite guys anymore. He's not really a part of the whole conglomerate anymore, which I think to me it's a good thing because I do think Adam Page is a talented guy. It's just a situation where his push is probably better off without having Cody, the Bucks, and Omega overshadow it just by being associated with him. That makes any sense?
It does. There is one thing I have to point out in the match. Did you notice the 2 second pseudo subliminal that happened in the match with Evil Uno interfering with the signal.
That I did not. Good catch on that.
There was a, yeah, I just happened to catch. I was like, oh shit. And yeah, it's a little bit of foreshadowing that's coming on. But after this, we get a video message. You know, so as Paige and Omega are beefing in the ring, we get a brief video message from Billy the Fish, where he's about to do something nasty to Michael Nakazawa, that we never actually find out what that was. So poor form on not following that up. But, you know, of course they went cut to a commercial break. So as Omega is storming, you know, backstage trying to, you know, rescue his quote unquote best friend, something happens with the Lucha Bros, but I don't know what, because of course there's no audio, so I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah. Picture in picture commercials are, it's nice that you see the picture, but unfortunately having the audio within the commercial and you having stuff occurring during said commercial break doesn't really help us until like hours later, where there's like actual like detail reports, or yeah. I guess if you're in Europe and you're watching the fight feed and you're getting everything, then yeah, that makes a little more sense to you guys over there. But yeah, unfortunately we don't get that over here, which sucks.
Yeah. There's a lot of context lost on this. And, you know, so the Lucha Brothers are there, they start beefing, and then we just completely forget about Pac and Michael Nakazawa, and we cut over to Darby Allin walking, I guess, to the ring, because when we come back from commercials, we have the next match, which was Cody Rhodes, Executive Vice President Cody Rhodes, and Darby Allin going up against The Butcher and The Blade.
Yep, I believe this is their TV debut officially, match-wise.
Nope, they had one. No, they had second, a match last week.
Right. You're correct about that. My apologies. So yeah, it's their second match, but it's their first kind of big time environment match, given the people that are involved on the other side. Which
Well, their first match was Cody Rhodes and QT Marshall last week.
Yeah, but I do think that Darby Allin has a little more star power than QT Marshall. I'm sorry.
Well, this much is true, but.
To me, the interesting thing is that they did hype up the fact that Darby took on this particular role, if you will, because he wants a piece of Cody again, given that they had a tie at Fyter Fest a couple months back. Yep. And the whole ordeal was, if they win this tag match together, then Cody gives him Darby a shot at some point or another for another single. So you get that tension. You get some good bits here and there in this match. Darby sacrificing himself with a nice little coffin drop over on the Butcher on Andy Williams. Good stuff there all around. But
yeah, on the apron, we might add.
But I'm just fucking sick of Cody winning everything, man. Like, ugh.
I feel that, but I actually enjoyed this match. I did enjoy this, man. I feel what you're saying, and I knew that as soon as Cody got the win, I was like, oh, shit. You
know? To me, I think it's just more so like you're kind of booking yourselves into a corner by putting your new tag team that you just brought in to hopefully bolster the division up. It's that whole thing of, you know, two singles guys beating an actual tag team just feels a lot weird when you are a company that says that you're going to take tag team wrestling seriously, because this sort of shit like has happened on Mondays and Thursdays and Fridays more often than not. Do we really need that on Wednesdays too? I just didn't.
I see what you're getting at, and I understand. Yeah. And I mean, it's something that seems to always happen, you know, invariably, especially when, you know, the singles guys are much bigger than the tag team. So, but I mean, you know, I guess, you know, again, it's just that, you know, it's that, well, you know, all elite wrestling, you know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, executive vice president got to stay strong or something akin to that. Or anyways. Something.
Not to spoil anything, but three of them take losses on this show. So I guess, you know, one of them had to win.
I guess so. It's just the situation where at this point I feel like the more and more deeper we get into this rabbit hole, and the more we sort of keep pounding the drum of things that the main elite executive vice presidents are involved with usually are not very good. It's probably a guarantee that we'll get blocked by all four of them at some point or another by 2020. Mark my words.
Is that your goal? Good.
No. It's just a sad premonition at this point, more
Well,
than
I mean,
anything.
it is what it is. I mean, I honestly don't care if they block me at this point. I mean, one of them already has, so you know.
Yeah, you're ahead of the curve on me on that one.
Yeah, but anyway, moving on. The third match was a complete squash. I don't even fully know the name of the one of the participants in it, but Awesome
I
Kong.
got, yeah, I got it. It was against another Texas local. Miranda Lees was the name, but they just mentioned it really quick because once they came out and the bell rang, Hurricane right to her face, and then the implant buster to finish it, which you just got to think at this point with the Hurricane still being used by Awesome Kong that they are gonna tie this thread at some point with Aja Kong, right?
I mean,
Right?
they've left this plot
Right?
they've left this plot thread dangling, so
Like at
I mean
some point,
I'm all for
they
long term I mean I'm all for long term booking, but you know, you gotta pay it off at some point.
yeah, please. It would be a great match in general, and just in Aja Kong in general is great. That's it. That's the tweet, I
Yep,
guess.
yeah, we like Awesome Kong, and yeah, except this whole again, this whole Nightmare Collective thing, I don't know.
Awesome Kong is the only reason we're paying attention to it, to be honest with you guys.
Yeah,
Even then,
and
it's
Awesome
still.
Kong, yeah, and you know, but it was a squash, and that's all there was to it.
They got the trophy with the hair again, and just pushing that particular story still, which, hey, at least they're being consistent on that. Cool, whatever.
And there's this weird bald, fat bald guy that we don't know who this is.
Yeah,
I mean, I
so.
shouldn't say fat, just a larger bald guy that we still
A
have.
large, a lar a large man
A
appears.
large man
Well,
appears. Hey, how about that? Shout out to our boys.
Days of Thunder
D
Boys.
D Dave
They
and
will
Lee.
have
Yep.
another episode at some point here soon. I'm
I
not
think
sure
coming.
this
Yeah,
week
I
or
think
next.
it's not this week. It'll be next week.
Next week during Christmas week. Okay,
Yeah, on
cool.
Boxing Day. So right
There you go.
after the football. So you know.
Perfectly timed. From there,
Indeed.
we do go into an interview segment, this time between Jim Ross sitting down with Jungle Boy, talking about the upcoming 10-minute challenge, if you will, that Chris Jericho's laid out to him. And Jungle Boy kind of explains the differences between Chris Jericho and the Man, Chris Jericho and the Legend, and sort of how he doesn't necessarily fear the Man, but he's aware of the pressure and gravity of the situation because of the Legend, which he does have a certain amount of respect for. Talks a little bit more about how his dad and him talked about moments like this and when they would come when he was starting up with his wrestling career, and while his dad was still here with us. And then just that, his dad would be proud of him for getting this far, and that he's ready to just give Jericho everything he has, which was a nice little heartwarming segment there to just get us ready for this next bout.
Yeah, this next bout was the 10-minute challenge between Le Champion Chris Jericho and Jungle Boy, and you know, of course, the whole challenge is you couldn't last 10 minutes with me. Well, we're about to find out, and all I'm gonna say is I love this. I thought this was an absolutely fantastic TV match.
I think it was my favorite TV match of the week for absolutely sure. So
I thought this was great. Jericho stooged for Jungle Boy so much until, you know, of course we get to the part where Jericho's experience takes over and he has to, you know, and he starts laying the beat down onto Jungle Boy, including, you know, getting him in the lion tamer for, you know, a literal minute and a half. And and he made the 10 minutes. He made his point. The baby face got over. Time limit, you know, 10 minute time limit draw. You know,
Definitely.
we got a Jericho tantrum.
Yeah.
Which is always great, which, where he says he demanded 5 more minutes and then he fucks off after 30 seconds. No.
The best part is that they only ring the bell for him because the timekeeper was terrified of getting his ass kicked, but nobody like even sanctioned that in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And yet Jericho still comes back, nearly gets pinned twice, and then just decides, screw this. I'm going.
He just fucks off. And then he comes back and he cuts a promo on Jon Moxley.
Yep.
Who sadly has not been part of this show at all today.
That's gone. That's an automatic con.
That's a huge con. Yeah, there's no way around that one. That is an absolutely huge con. So, of course, we're going to get some more Jericho and Moxley Tizo at setting up for New Year's Day in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And now that, Jericho is still Le Champion, it looks like heading into 2020, I have some concerns about a certain match coming up in January. But we will talk about that later this week when we record both our episode 60 of the Strong Style Story podcast, when we not only will preview Wrestle Kingdom 14 both nights, but that is also our 4th anniversary show.
Yeah, we're going to have some stuff to talk about, especially as New Japan wraps up its year, 2019, and goes into a brand new year with 2 very big events that are going to probably set the pace for everything else that happens for the rest of the year. So,
and by the way, happy Hiromu Eve, everybody, because
yes,
by the time this drops, Hiromu Takahashi will be returning to the ring. But anyway, this is not a New Japan show, so we're moving on to what's next on AEW, which is a backstage promo with SCU that the Lucha Bros intrude on. Penta shows Chris Daniels something on his phone, and then he just leaves, and it just abruptly ends.
Yeah, Daniels kind of backs down a little bit, too, which shows that really the Lucha Bros are in his head from Penta basically just whooping him accordingly a couple of weeks ago in that singles match of theirs, which, okay, some character things going on there, which is cool. But from there, we do go to one of the big advertised matches for the course of this week. The 2 women that we saw in AEW Dark grab another pair of victories. They go up against each other for number 1 contendership rights, which is Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, versus the Galaxy's Greatest Alien, Chris Statlander. This match.
Okay, I think we're going to have some disagreements here because, well, why don't you go first?
I just think a lot of Britt had a couple of very noticeable, like, oof spots. The sling blade missing by a mile and then some. Definitely noticeable. But I do think that Statlander did the best that she could with this. And in, like, bringing things together, like, I really like the fact that her power got put into heavy display. Hated the fact that fucking JR decided to make fucking fat jokes in the process of it, which just...
Yeah, well,
can we just mute Jim Ross at this point anytime that a women's match is on? Please, anybody at all?
Jim Ross should not be calling women's matches, period.
Simple as that.
It's clear that he's still stuck in the, it's clear he's still stuck in the Attitude Era where that's concerned. But that being said, Chris Statlander definitely did a carry job on Britt Baker, sometimes literally.
I don't think it was a bad carry job by any means necessary, but I do think that in terms of how Britt Baker looks performance-wise, just by her own merits, this arguably might have been her worst outing so far.
Yeah, Britt Baker, they need to get off this Britt Baker kick because there are so many better women in this promotion at this point. And they keep going back to Britt Baker. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I like her. I like her. She, her and Adam Cole on that episode of Bourdain won me over as people, as affable people to talk to and, you know, eat, you know, sauerkraut and sausages with, you know, in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is just not, it's just not happening.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
The Britt Baker experiment needs to end.
Mm-hmm.
So then we move on to a backstage promo with Sean Spears and Tully Blanchard.
Wait.
Oh,
we're not skipping this.
Oh, you're right. We're My bad. I did skip something.
to be fair, I don't blame you for doing it, but
yeah, you're right.
Unfortunately, I do have to talk about this.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. You're right. My bad.
So with the aftermath of this, we do get Tony Schiavone at first coming down to interview Chris Statlander, which we get a nice little moment with Statlander booping him, which, yep, you know, alien stuff, which, cool, the character's there. But then Brandi Rhodes shows up, and so does the Nightmare Collective stuff, which, I get it, they've been wanting an answer from Statlander for weeks about being the next person to join their little cult, you know, the second cult that we have in the company thus far.
Mm-hmm.
Statlander shakes her fingers no, which, hooray, cool. And then she gets a shoe heel to her eye, basically, yeah, which, oof, first of all. And then second of all, JR calling it a Louis Vuitton was just, okay, let's just put it this way. As Trevor Dame of Through the Years in our wonderful network put it, you know, that's one bridge that you're not going to get me to cross in terms of believing that he knew that was a Louis Vuitton pump from sight alone.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I want to shout out another show, the WorldCast, which is actually going on a bit of a hiatus, so you might want to listen to their most recent episode. Which covers the holiday Star Wars of 1983, which features the Loser Leaves Town cage match between Kerry Von Erich and Michael Hayes. Johnny Sauer on that show keeps saying Bill Mercer is the worst as far as commentary. Jim Ross in 2019 is getting there, and I mean I was willing to cut him a break for like in 2017 in New Japan, because I know he had an absolute horror show of a year in 2017. Yeah. But at this point, I mean, come on, just he does not need to be on TV, period. This is unnecessary.
I don't get it anymore. Yeah. That's, at this point, I'm ready to
Tony
get off Schiavone, the bandwagon.
Tony Schiavone and Excalibur can carry the show. You know?
Yeah, they will do just fine.
Yo, Tony Schiavone still has his wits about him. You know?
Yeah, it's been bad throughout. Interesting thing, and almost kind of depressing in a way, is that in the aftermath of it, as the Nightmare Collective girls were walking away, Sadie Gibbs actually came out and sort of helped Statlander back up. And
I noticed that.
Talk about, you know, someone that's only been on AW programming once or twice at most, and for her first TV appearance, she's just sort of like an enhancement talent of sorts, helping somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody that they had video packages for at the beginning of the year. I don't know. It just feels counterproductive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, we're going to have an extended discussion about certain things in AEW. I don't know when that will be. But
I think a post-Revolution world might be the best place to do it, because they'll have almost like a full calendar year's worth of pay-per-views, if you will, because they mentioned, you know, they're having four of them each year. So it's kind of like this will be technically like the fourth of the timeline before they go into the Double or Nothing or whatever they do for their anniversary.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Yeah. Maybe you're right.
I think at that point we can probably have that discussion, or wait until that 1 year anniversary mark at worst.
Yeah. Following that, we get, as I try to start saying, and until you rightly corrected me, we have a Shawn Spears and Tully Blanchard promo that I have absolutely no idea what the fuck the point of this promo was.
I guess they realize Shawn Spears is really bad in singles and they're giving him a tag team partner to hopefully carry his ass for the remainder of his contract.
You know the way he comports himself, Shawn Spears, that is, he reminds you there really is no difference between him and the way that Aaron Stevens is acting on the NWA Power show. You know, there's just seemingly no difference.
It's almost like they're clones of each other or something. I mean, what?
I mean, I don't know, but oh my goodness, yeah, that promo was absolutely pointless. I'm sorry. It was pointless, and I am tired of Shawn Spears, you know, taking up air on AEW programming that could be better spent, you know.
Yeah, let's reemphasize once again, Tully Blanchard deserves better.
Like, how does Tully Blanchard not taken him out himself at this point? Come on, Tully.
You have to wonder. You really have to wonder at this point.
Is that Shawn Spears' paycheck really that good? Because, holy Jesus. All right. Finally, our main event, the last Dynamite match of 2019 for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. Your champions, SoCal Uncensored, Frankie Kazarian and Scorpio Sky, without Christopher Daniels, because he's doing something. Going up against, you know, the new number one contenders, Executive Vice Presidents Matt and Nick Jackson. And, Chris, what did you think of this match?
I thought it was okay. I do think that this is one match where I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago where we kind of mentioned commercial breaks being really put in awkward spots. I do think that the main event could have gone without one of those at this point if you really wanted to kind of showcase your big title match, tag team match, main event for the first time on AEW television. I do think this should have been a match with limited, if not like any commercial breaks whatsoever kind of thing.
I'm telling you, they're taking me out of the matches at this point.
It's really unfortunate because the timing on them has just not been that good, especially over the last 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, it's
noticeable.
They've just gotten worse, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you on that.
And plus, again, you know, this match just came across, again, is just dull to me.
It had certain bits and pieces where it picked up, but then for the most part, you're just kind of, wait, so you're going into the finishing sequence now? Wait, that's the finish?
Yeah, we've seen Young Bucks matches, and, you know, Kazarian and Scorpio Sky really don't have the chemistry that Daniels and Kazarian did.
Yeah, there's definitely a stark difference between where Scorpio and Kazarian are almost trying to figure that out still on the spot by doing more of these matches.
Yeah.
While, you know, Kazarian and Daniels have been a team for years at this point. You can definitely tell that, you know, there's definitely that gap there too.
Yeah, I really would much prefer the addiction back at this point, you know?
Yeah, I do agree.
But, you know, and so unfortunately, the SCU super push continues. They retain. And then to end 2019, we have the competing cult angle coming alive in the ring.
The better cult angle, we might add.
The better cult angle. And the Beaver Boys have officially joined the cult now.
I do like that call because we were talking specifically about more contracted wrestlers being a part of this rather than just, you know, Stu Grayson and Evil Uno with, you know, a bunch of putties. So yeah. This is a step
creepers,
towards that.
I guess.
Yeah.
Creepers, which I really hope Steve Ditko is happy with this, even though they look nothing like the Creeper, but you know. But
alas.
Yeah, unfortunately, the angle did not really get over until Uno put his hand in Nick Jackson's bloody mouth.
It almost felt like he took a fucking tooth in the process or something.
It felt like it, yes. It did. It's a shame that the angle didn't really get as over as it maybe should have. I enjoyed it, but...
Corpus Christi, I don't think it was the right place to do something like that because that crowd is just not, I feel, geared for this sort of thing. And they've seen one too many angles in their heyday that just were probably like flat end after they're just like, meh, which sucks because this is like an interesting next step for the Dark Order, in my opinion, to take as they're bringing in more, you know, names into their fold rather than just as mentioned, you know, Putty 1, Putty 2, Putty 3,
right,
so on and so forth.
And you know,
they beat up the elite that, on top of it too. Which
yeah, they
is
beat
the
up the
thing.
Freaking elite. I mean, Kenny Omega got walloped by the putties. You know,
talk about what a difference a year makes. Kenny Omega at the end of 2018 is going into the Tokyo Dome as IWGP Heavyweight Champion against Hiroshi Tanahashi, one of the biggest matches of his career, to 2019, where he's just getting beaten up by a bunch of putties in the Dark Order.
But, well.
He's mentioned he's taking a back step in one of a recent interview that he did. I think it was for Sports Illustrated or something like that. But my God, man, like, that is a massive back step to a certain extent.
Yeah. But, you know, I enjoyed the angle. It again maybe didn't get as over as it should have. There's still plenty of time to fine tune this. I mean, we have, you know, a week off.
Yeah, definitely.
Because AEW ain't gonna work Christmas, and well, frankly, neither are we.
Yep, very much so.
But that is the end of. The AEW Dynamite ends 2019 with Nick Jackson's mouth blood on Evil Uno's hand.
Yep, here we go, boys.
And that's it.
On to 2020.
On to 2020. On to Jacksonville. As we march towards Revolution now on the 29th on Leap Day of the coming year. So I guess here we go. The pros and cons.
Pros. Gonna say Chris Statlander for sure is a big one. Jericho versus Jungle Boy, as well as the antics in the aftermath of the match with Jericho and the pre-promo with Jungle Boy leading to it. I felt that if these were like your two, three big segments of the night, they definitely did deliver. Chris Statlander in general is a beast. Great stuff. And even the ending angle for me worked really well in terms of continuing to push the story, which is a good thing. So that's that. Cons, still worded out by, you know, a tag team that they want to establish in the Butcher and the Blade, just getting beaten by Cody because, well, Cody Rhodes things. I think more so, I'm not going to comment on the opening because as we talked before the show, my feed was very inconsistent on my commute back home. And thus I missed the entirety of that opening match and have to go back and actually see it from beginning to end. But I've heard good things about it, so I'll let you put that as a pro accordingly if you do. The Brandi Rhodes stuff is just nope. Giant nope in the main event. Did fall a bit flat, so I guess that could be considered a con.
My pros and cons, first of all, Penta pinning Kenny Omega. Thank you, Jesus. This should have been happening a while ago and maybe even in a singles match, but here we are. You know, let's start building the Lucha Bros as, you know, a credible, tangible, threat on AEW programming, even if the, you know, you want to make them tweeners or whatever, which makes sense because, you know, again, technically, you know, Phoenix has always been technical and Penta's always been the Rudo. So, I mean, technically you could make them tweeners. You know, it's just like the only reason why they're working together is because they're brothers. So, you know.
Their allegiance is basically to themselves. That's a simple enough thing to write.
Yeah, I mean, if he was if Penta was on his own as a singles guy, this would have been a no-brainer. But since he's there's a tag team here. Continuing the pros. I liked the Cody Darby Allin versus Butcher and the Blade match, but I take your point on it. Jericho versus Jungle Boy was fantastic. I loved it. It was, you know, a 10-minute, you know, sprint that, you know, did its job. It, you know, Jericho stooged for Jungle Boy like a champ. Like, well, mm-hmm. like the champ he is. Got Jungle Boy and you know, Jurassic Express over huge in the process. Chris Statlander beating Britt Baker was the 100% right call on that. That's a major, major pro. And yeah. I did really enjoy the ending angle with the Dark Order, even if certain quarters of the internet and the crowd in Corpus Christi didn't really seem to respond to it either. And they built it up all night with the video intrusions.
Too. Yeah.
So, cons, no Moxley, huge con for me. No Orange Cassidy, huge con.
Yeah.
That's a huge con. I didn't like the fact that the Pac threatening, you know, Pac threatening Michael Nakazawa went literally nowhere. They never followed it up in the end. Mm-hmm. The whole Nightmare Collective thing, just Jesus Christ, can we just have Awesome Kong just beating fuck out of other women on the roster, and maybe even a couple of men too. I mean, let's face it, we all know what she's capable of. Shout out to Bubba the Love Sponge. Let's just have Awesome Kong squashing people, and, you know, well, which we got, but you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah, definitely. I get where you're coming from on that.
Yeah. Another con is the SCU super push continues. And I was really kind of hoping, even though, you know, I'm not the biggest Young Bucks fan, I was really just hoping that this slow boat to nowhere would finally end. But maybe we're setting up the Lucha Bros now, you know?
Yeah, either that or it could be setting up the Dark Order as well, too. That's a consideration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be as well. So, so, hey, it's been 12 episodes of TV, Chris. Overall thoughts on the first 12, the 2019 output of All Elite Wrestling on TNT.
Yeah, I think we've had some excellent matches throughout TV, certain things that some good moments established here and there. Chris Jericho continues to prove why he's one of the most consistent performances in our particular lifetimes as a pro wrestler, even if some of his more personal out-of-the-ring choices have been questionable at best over the last month and a half. We won't get into details in that regard here. You can probably see and read all about it in various social medias and the like. Alongside that, I guess the biggest thing that they still have with, you know, 12 episodes down the can is just trying to figure out all the other things with the production side, trying to figure out like good places for actually putting things in the commercials where it's not killing certain TV segments and transitioning them well.
Yeah, you know, something we forgot to mention is that they did, like, you know, this Chris Jericho thing, you know, with Sammy Guevara holding signs and dropping him like it was, you know, that Bob Dylan video.
Yeah, I mean, it was in picture in pictures, so we had no idea what was going on until, like, reading somebody who was probably watching the Fight TV feed on Twitter, like, talk about exactly what it was. So
yeah.
I think you need a little more consistency in how you time your ad breaks accordingly, and whether that's a discussion that they need to have with the TNT execs themselves, I don't know, but I do think that it's something within 2020 that they've got to start looking at. I mean, the product is out there. We have a small enough sample size to know that there's good wrestling happening on Wednesday nights now, but good wrestling alone on a national to global stage like this one isn't going to win any awards, or nor do I think it's going to bring in new fans. You need something more. You need to have the entire package figured out together. So that's, production needs to be something that they continue to improve. Music is something that they definitely need to look to improve in 2020 for sure, with certain themes. We've harped on this before. I do think it's something that they need to look at moving forward. And I think just trying to figure out exactly who are your top guys, who you're going to be pushing, and keeping those pushes consistent rather than being stop and go for a couple of them kind of thing. Because obviously we have had a couple of guys that they've done really well with. Jon Moxley has been damn near perfection every time he's been on screen, in terms of who he is, how he acts, like the way that he wrestles and things like that. Everything has been clicking on that. But then you have guys like Pac that they've sort of been missing the boat on to an extent, even though he's arguably one of the best characters that they have in every aspect kind of thing. So
yeah.
Well, there's certain things to figure out still. That it's good, but it can get better, I guess is the best way of putting it.
Yeah, and they also need to figure out their method of actually leading into matches. Like, if you didn't know any better, you know, I mean, they are still relying a lot on being the elite, and I think they need to come away from that. If you're doing TV, not everybody is going to be watching Being the Elite. You know, and they need to do a better job of building up new wrestlers, you know, like at least, you know, in vignettes or something, you know.
But, yeah, I do agree with that.
Yeah,
that falls definitely under the production side. Yeah. I feel specifically.
I mean, even the music, at this point, I've tuned out the music, you know, I've tuned out all the theme songs.
Which is kind of depressing when you think about it, to be honest, because music is such a huge part of pro wrestling in general. Like,
it is. Like, for Moxley, I mean, I don't even get into Moxley's theme. It was like, he has a perfect, obviously unlicensed one that he used in the indies.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, it's just something like Jimmy Hart used to be able to, you know, so well, was so good at mimicking, you know, actual songs.
Like
Jericho's old theme was Even Flow, which is ironic considering Raven was there. But I mean, yeah, even then, Raven's theme was a mock of, you know, Come As You Are by Nirvana, which itself was a ripoff of 80s by Killing Joke. But anyway,
yeah,
you know, and you know, DDP, of course, his theme was Smells Like Teen Spirit. Why can't someone do something close to a knockoff of Aneurysm, which is what Moxley used in the indies, you know?
Yeah, I do think it's a situation where if you have your specific artist that you know you want to work with, if you want to keep the same guy for the AEW side of defense that they seem to have for a lot of these themes, cool, but kind of start taking a little bit more direction and say, hey, this is sort of what we're looking for these particular guys and what they want to do, and then try to work something around that, as you mentioned, like doing covers that are close enough to a lot of these themes that they use in the indies, or even like current day stuff that they feel might fit a guy for a certain period of time. I mean,
yeah,
you can work with that. It's something to improve on towards. And then I think you mentioned the other thing, obviously, the way that they're building to matches and how certain matches come about, that they need to do a better job of not only explaining that, but using their winning record stuff to emphasize more of that, rather than just, you know, throwing certain people in and saying, oh, it's because this one win that they had in the last 2 months after losing like three or four something in a row was strong enough to be considered like a push for something like this.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, you know. As I mentioned, the more sports-like presentation, even though if you think about it, if you're talking about a sports-esque product in pro wrestling, I just don't think that really has any room to work, considering that they're doing some wacky enough stuff with the Colts and the like. So,
yeah, right. Right, so, yeah, I mean, it's been overall enjoyable. Not every episode has been great, and we haven't been shy about saying when we thought so. I'll be obviously Chris and I were even disagreeing about this episode today. mean, overall, I've enjoyed it. I'm not even going to compare it to NXT because I don't watch WWE programming. So I got, I have no basis, you know, I have no reference point, you know? I mean, we can discuss ratings at some point. I'm not going to today. So just don't, you know, I just don't care. You know, I think the show overall has been a success for TNT because they were, they've gotten higher than what they originally projected all around, which is something I think that gets lost in the discussion about the ratings and the viewership. But yeah, you know, there is still definitely some room for improvement. And I mean, they have a couple of weeks. Hopefully, I mean, I know it's a holiday period, but hopefully they can maybe, you know, tighten up the ship a little bit here, you know. But I mean, we're still in for the long haul. I'm still gonna be watching on New Year's Day, and we're gonna be talking about it on New Year's Day too. So, you know, so as far as I'm concerned, that's it for me for AEW in 2019. Chris, you have any last comments about things?
Well, not at all. Interesting 2019 in general for pro wrestling as a whole, and let's see where 2020 takes us.
Yep. And yeah, so at this point, Chris, go ahead and plug yourself.
Simply enough, you can just find me through Twitter and Instagram mostly. That's at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z.
You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. My personal Twitter at GD Wessel. And of course, I also do another show called Busting Balls. This week, the Busting Balls crew discussed their holiday wishes for the sport. Some frivolous, some very serious. So tune into that, soundcloud.com/busting-balls. The name of the episode, Santa Balls is Coming to Town. So, with a nice nice picture of Jurgen Klopp in a Santa suit, holding a beer and throwing up the the metal sign, you know.
The kind of content we love here, ladies and gentlemen, to say the least.
And stay tuned. This is, you know, our last Boom Goes the Dynamite for 2019. It's not mine and Chris's last show of 2019 because, as we already mentioned, later this week, we will be recording our episode 60 of the Strong Style Story podcast, which is not only our Wrestle Kingdom 14 preview, but our fourth anniversary show. So this is probably going to be another two-part split up, you know?
Side A, side B time, boys. Get hype. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's all we got. So so I just want to say on behalf of myself, Chris, and Lawrence, hope everyone has a good holiday period. I know that, you know, it's difficult for some, and we do sympathize, and you know, we gave you our Twitters and all that. Feel free to reach out if, you know, you need somebody to talk to during this period, because that's what, because we're here for you. We're actually here for you. I do want to
definitely in for that. And then one other thing as well too is that outside of the obvious anniversary show, we do have some other works coming down the pipeline during the holiday season, which hopefully
which we can't talk about right now, but
no, we can't. But it's something to be really excited about for everybody in the pro wrestling only feed. So yeah, get hyped.
And once again, and thank you to the pro wrestling only feed for allowing us to go on with this nonsense for the last few years, both, you know, with Strong Style Story and Strong Style History, which, you know, we sadly has fallen by the wayside. Maybe we can bring that back in 2020. But, And you know what? You know, I pitched Boom Goes the Dynamite a mere 48 hours before Dynamite premiered. Nobody stopped us, and here we are.
Yeah, look at how that all worked out. Extra bulk little work for us, but we enjoy doing it. So there's that.
So on behalf of myself, Chris, and Lawrence, thanks for listening these last 12 weeks, and happy holidays, everyone. Chris, any final words?
Not at all. Happy 2019. Happy holidays to everybody out there for your 2019. should rather say, and a happy 2020.
Yep, and we will be back on New Year's Day for episode 13 of Boom Goes the Dynamite. So until then, we'll happy holidays, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Or later in the week for Strong Style Story, whichever you prefer. Anyway, take care. Have a good one.